Hey, Podnuckians. Welcome to the Mini PC Show, episode 96. I'm Door-to-Door Geek. I'm joined this week by Flying Rich. How's everything going, man?
It's all good. Someday it'll stop raining. I guess it might be a couple of months from now, but it will stop raining.
Well, that's one of those things I ask you not to hold your breath, because with weather these days, you kind of never know when it's going to happen.
Oh, yeah. It's been raining a freaking storm here. I mean, it's every stinking day.
Yeah, I felt like Orlando here this past week. I swear, every day between 11 and 1 o'clock, it rains for at least like 10 to 15 minutes.
What do you mean you said Orlando here?
Well, every time I go down to Disney, I swear every day between 10 and like 2 o'clock, it rains for like 10 minutes.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you're in Orlando. You didn't let me know.
No.
Yeah, that's... I'm poor. Yeah, that's standard. My father-in-law jokes about Florida weather. You know, it's for 10 months of the year, it's mid-80s and a chance of afternoon thunderstorm.
Yeah, I want to say, yeah, and it was Tracy even posted on a social media thing that he's still not used to a place to live where it rains like almost every day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's... And I hate to... I'm going to tell you something that's a little embarrassing to my intelligence. My wife and I have been wanting to go, you know, jet skiing or canoeing or something for a couple of weeks now. And we twice tried to go in the afternoon. Of course, there's a chance of thunderstorm every afternoon. You got to do it in the morning. You can't wait till the afternoon. So when we're ready, we're walking out the door to go canoeing, and I look at the radar on the phone. I'm like, yeah, we're not going.
Well, maybe if you drive really slow there, by the time you get there, it'll be done.
Yeah, it took about 6 months.
Yeah, and you live like what? Like less than 10 minutes from the water?
It's like 10 straight miles, so on a good day, it's a 20-minute ride or less.
Gotcha. Well, I will say the only hardware news updates I got is I did 3D print two cases, one case for my Odroid H2, which is the, I want to say 110 by 110 millimeter Intel based board. It's almost really good, and it has push buttons on the outside that really ingeniously you push horizontal, but the button pushes vertically on the buttons, and it does seem to work fine. And I printed a ROC 64 case that is not really up to spec yet. I'm going to try to reprint it, but I did cancel my Raspberry Pi 4 order because I realized I logged into the website and it said estimated shipping date 7/16/2019, which was a good 2+ weeks beforehand. So I just, you know, started up a chat with them. I asked them to please cancel my order. I said, you know, don't worry, I'm not going to be a jerk. When the opportunity comes, I'll come back to you guys. But for right now, I really wish you guys would have been more transparent about everything. So they, and I'm trying to remember which service it was I used. But I canceled my order, and then I switched it to the same place that you got yours from, Rich, Canakit.
Yep. Which comes from, guess where?
Texas.
Canada.
Oh, Canakit. Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Indeed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The first order was from Newark, N-E-W-A-R-K. And I don't want to say they were misleading. I could have very well missed an email. I fully admit that. But I was not aware that I was not getting my Raspberry Pi 4. What I'm going to guess is they took hypothetically an order of 3,000, but they only had 1,500 come in. And I just happened to be one of the people who did not make the cut, which is fine. You know, it happens to the best of us kind of thing. So I ordered just the Raspberry Pi 4, nothing else. Raspberry Pi 4, 4 gig from Canakit. I did get a notice saying it was shipping, but I don't remember getting a tracking number. And it's been 3 days. So I do expect to get it like literally any day now.
You're not going to get a tracking number.
Well, I'll say this. That's not the end of the world, but it would have been really nice to get a tracking number.
So actually, my plan, I got the one from Canakit, and I did a couple of videos. I did two videos on heat sinks and fans and testing on it, and I'm probably going to do a couple more videos, comparison videos with it. So far, I'm happy with it. I haven't really exercised it to its capabilities, which I'm hoping to do in the future, because I'm under corporate house arrest here in Orlando for the next week, so I'm not allowed to leave. So I brought enough tech gear to keep me occupied over the weekend.
Gotcha. I will say, I've only checked out, here's like the gimmick. I technically didn't partake in all of like ETA Prime's video on the Raspberry Pi 4 cooling, because I'm not listening to a word he's saying. I listen to podcasts and I watch the video at 2x, but at least he puts up nice number graphs so I can see what's going on. You're proving clearer, I'll say, Rich, because I did watch your one video. You're proving clearer that you do not need to spend even $12-13 to get adequate cooling for the Raspberry Pi 4.
My last video, I did two videos. One is like a $12 cooling solution. One's a $7 cooling solution. And running it, doing numerical computations, you know, calculating prime numbers. So I stole the script. And I got to say thanks to the guys. I got to say thanks to ETA Prime for publishing, you know, his commands that he used. And thanks to Explaining Computers. I used his script, modified it a little bit. And so I did testing with no heat sinks to see how quick it would take to get to thermal throttling. And then I did it with heat sinks and fans. And yeah, you don't have to go crazy. $7 will cool your Raspberry Pi. You don't have to spend, what was the one heat sink? It looked crazy with the heat pipes and all that.
Well, I'll say that's the one I ordered. I'm going to make sure I put the link in the YouTube chat. I ordered it just because ETA Prime's video showed this was by far the most normal temperatures he saw in his testing. And he admitted it was initial testing. He didn't do full-fledged testing, but it was the Seed Studio, S-E-E-E-D Studio, Ice Tower CPU cooling fan Raspberry Pi 4, $19.90 after shipping. I want to say $28. It says pre-order. I already got shipping notice that it was coming in from Hong Kong, and I already got shipping notice that it was landing in, I want to say, Cincinnati, like 5 days ago.
Should have had it by now. But...
Well, it's a question. No. Here's the thing about international shipping. It's a question of, is the container it came on going to be earmarked to be actually looked at and investigated, kind of thing? Because if it is, it could take up to 2 weeks to come out of there.
Oh, okay. Great. Yeah, I've ordered a number of things from China recently, and like my AliExpress orders haven't made it, and I would have expected them to be here by now.
Yeah, it's completely random whether or not you're going to be on the fast boat or the slow boat, in like air quotes, because we don't have any choice with that. We just order it, they just stick it in a bin, and whatever bin it lands in depends on how fast it is. I've ordered, I want to say it was April. I ordered, it was something small too, it was like a $10 device, $4 shipping. I got it in less than, I want to say it was 14 days. So, you know, I think it's just crazy random. But the main reason I bought this cooling device, this in monstrosity, this gargantuan monster of a cooler, is because I want to beat the living turds out of my Raspberry Pi 4, try to make it do any and everything I possibly can, and have still a mostly portable computer.
Even without running the fan, I think it still cools enough because it's got the heat pipe set up. So I think even passive cooling with that setup, it won't overheat.
Well, I know both edges of that will be sufficient. Either a super cheap heat sink and just active cooling, some sort of fan on it, or an insane amount of passive cooling and very little airflow should do the trick. I'm going to say give me both, just because, you know, give me both. And I will say, on the last episode, I said about, I personally much rather have in such a form factor pulling air off. You were talking about pushing air on. I did get an email from at least Captain Zero that said you always want to push air on. I will say I spent at least 3.5 hours looking at video on full desktop computers and mini computers, and everyone agreed it doesn't matter. Just make sure you're doing something with air, moving air. And that's a big fan you got there, Rich. Can't hear you.
I don't know if this is a 60 or an 80 millimeter. Let's see.
Can't be 80?
Yeah, I think it's a 60 millimeter. But yeah, a 60 millimeter, so it's just ever so slightly wider than the Pi. But here's the thing, the 40 millimeter fan, at least the one I had, I couldn't stand the noise. This thing is near silent, so the 60 millimeter fan, definitely much quieter.
Well, how much price difference were the two? Because I would expect a bigger fan would at least be, even if it's the same quality, 50% more.
You know, I'd have to look. I don't think it really was. These are super commodity items. You can find somebody to sell you at a good price. The larger fan is $5.
You can find anybody to sell you cheap fans, but if you want like an actual quality fan, you're always going to spend at least $8 to $12.
You know, let me pull up my videos because I did put the links in the video.
Yeah, I will say I'm basically eagerly anticipating the arrival of mine. I did see at least two people on YouTube doing videos showing doing actual video editing on a Raspberry Pi 4, and it seemed like the biggest drawback was the initial file size. So hypothetically, if you're editing a video of like 2 to 3 minutes long, it could be mostly usable, mostly doable. But if you're editing like a half an hour long video, expect it to really, really chug along and really work very slowly. It will work, just not smooth.
Okay, so here's the thing. On my $12 solution, I got all the stuff from Amazon. So the fan was $489 for the 40 millimeter. And for the larger fan, the 60 millimeter fan, it was, I don't know if it's $3.50. Let me just click through so I know what it is. And it's $3. That's it. So the 60 millimeter fan from Ali is $3, and then they're going to hit you for a little bit of shipping. Dora, I'm not hearing you.
Sorry. And for people watching the live video, I forgot to show you the actual cooler if you haven't seen it yet. It's literally like this 3/4 the size of a Raspberry Pi turned upright. There's nothing small or tiny about this thing.
Yeah. All right. So here's the problem. That's fine. If you're just going to have it sitting there.
Yeah, thing bolts onto the Raspberry Pi in 4 places.
No, that's not what I was getting at. Meaning, if you're going to do some sort of stacked cluster, that so won't work.
Oh,
or you
got
to design your cluster around that cooling system. Whereas a 60 millimeter fan that's, you know, what, 10 millimeters tall, you can make slight adjustments and get that to stack or, you know, some sort of cluster going on.
Well, I'm going to be very time sensitive, and I'm going to say as of August 14th, 2019, 9:17 p.m. at night, I still see unbelievably few and far reasons to actually do a home cluster. Now, if I'm hosting an actual like public-facing website where I expect thousands of visitors, or I'm doing something literally in an enterprise where the goal is to have like unbelievable scalability and uptime, I can understand doing a cluster, but for me doing a home thing, I don't really know of any software that I would use that would truly benefit from a cluster.
You know, you could do Kubernetes, of course. VMworld is coming up, and I'm waiting for them to make some sort of announcement, because there's somebody already posted, I shared the link with you, about the Raspberry Pi 4, that they're doing like a 4,000 node Kubernetes cluster.
Well, that was the thing. They were not clear. They like were purposefully, I want to say, misleading
fishing
about what it could be. It could be that they are just giving them away for the upcoming VM World, which I believe is in like 2 weeks.
Yeah, and I'm not going.
Yeah, or are they going to do a 2+ terahertz Kubernetes cluster with 400 Raspberry Pi nodes? I'm going to guess they're going to give them away to people in the show so they can take a Raspberry Pi home and they can start to literally do what you've been salivating over now for every bit of 8 months, wanting to actually run a VMware server or some part of the infrastructure off of a Raspberry Pi.
Well, ESXi host, because here's the thing. Right now, a home cluster, if you're running, you know, Kubernetes, Docker, that's fine. That'll work. But realistically, what I want to be able to do... All right, so the Raspberry Pi 4 solves it two ways. One, if we get virtualization. The other thing... So I guess I got to slate a couple of things I'm going to do with this. SUSE Linux, which runs on the Raspberry Pi, has KVM pretty much baked in. So you could run Raspberry Pi virtual machines or ARM virtual machines on the Raspberry Pi 4 with the 4 gigs of RAM. It used to be, oh, where is it? I gotta reach. You had to do it with something like this. The ROC chip 64, that had, you could get it with 4 gigs of RAM. And it says 4G on it, so you know it's the 4 gig of RAM one. You know, I was messing around with SUSE on it, and SUSE wasn't really well supported on this. So that was a little bit of an issue. So SUSE Linux, ESXi, but the other thing that's cool is you can TFT boot it. So say I have Raspberry Pi 4s. So if I have Raspberry Pi 4s at my house, and I'm in Orlando for 2 weeks because I'm under corporate house arrest, I could, what TFT boot does is it says, you basically in the BIOS on this say, hey, you're going to boot, but you're going to boot over the network, call out like you're yelling into the void over the network. Some server is going to reply to you, and the server knows either based on your MAC address or your IP address, what image it's going to give to you. So theoretically, I could be remote from where the Raspberry Pi is. It could be in my center in a drawer. And I could switch what image it's going to load on the TFTP server. And I could have it boot anything I want. So maybe I want it to do Home Assistant. Maybe I want it to do Plex. Maybe I want it to do, you know, fill in the blank, PiOware. And I could have, and PiOware is a bad example because there's hardware that has to go along with that. But I could have it boot pretty much anything I want. And so then there negates the reason, why do I want a 4 gig one? I could actually get away with 1 gig or 2 gig versions. I don't necessarily need the 4 gig. So another good reason to have a Raspberry Pi 4, because it allows you to TFT boot.
Yeah, and I'll say, to me, the real like place where a TFT boot could shine, I'm not going to say would shine, but where it could shine is quite literally, you could say, okay, from 8 in the morning till noon, I want it to be a Plex server. But from noon till 6 o'clock at night, I want it to be Home Assistant. And then overnight, I want it to be a third different system running. You can literally have timed reboots pointing to different operating systems, to where hypothetically you can only afford one Raspberry Pi, but you really want these three different things running in your house. Well, then if you just schedule them out, you can literally have a multifunction appliance running in your house, which is the literal exact kind of thing that no hardware manufacturer is offering you. Whether it's an Amazon piece of hardware, a Google piece of hardware, a Facebook piece of hardware, or anybody in between, there is no Nvidia Shield anything or anybody offering you a multifunction appliance for your house. And that's the kind of thing you can do with TFT booting, which I will admit, is not super easy to set up, but it is definitely not complex.
And so doing a successful TFT boot, nothing is overly complicated. Everything is pretty simple. But a lot of the problem with the language is they don't talk, if you're reading documents on that, they don't talk about on the boot device, you're going to do this. On the TFTP server, you're going to do this. Like, these instructions you do on here, these instructions you do over here. So setting up a TFTP server isn't that complex. In setting something like this to TFT boot, I haven't done it yet, but from what I understand, is not too complex either. Marrying them together and getting them work right, that's, you know, the magic exponential confoundery.
Well, if you connect it to a MAC address, I have to believe it's not, I don't want to say impossible, but definitely simplified, because MAC addresses don't change.
Correct. Unless you change them.
Well, and that's one of the things that we nerds, I'll just say, know how to do. We can literally change a MAC address to say whatever we want. I will say I am actually eager to get the Raspberry Pi 4. I didn't think I would be very hyped about it, but I do think it's going to actually be able to serve an actual purpose, is what I want to say, and be usable in a atmosphere where I don't have to click, stop what I'm doing, take a drink, wait 30 seconds, and then wait for the result to happen. I think it's going to be pretty responsive.
So one of the things I kind of hate what they did is they went with micro HDMI. And mini HDMI is just as bad. I don't know that they make HDMI connectors like the USB where there's one stacked on the other, but it'd be nice. It seems like there's almost enough real estate. If they moved where the power connector was, they could make the HDMI connectors full size on one side, like two of them. Or they could, you know, it seems to me there could have been a way they did two full-size HDMIs. Although, because both my wife and I had Droid Bionics, we both have the micro HDMI to HDMI cable.
Yeah, I have three devices that have that, I'll say. I had the Droid X, I want to say it was a Droid X2, had mini. I had the GPD XD gaming handheld console that had, I believe, a mini. And then I have a Chromebook Flip that had a mini. Two of them have a mini, one of them have a micro. So because of that, I was able to just, you know, I'm going to be able to just right now have the cables and not have to do any more in a investment. So I think I'm lucky with that.
You know, are we good on this topic, or can we talk about something else?
I mean, if you have more
email.
I was going to say, if you have more to bring, you can. I think I've pretty much said everything I'll say. But yeah, we do have an email sitting in like the inbox.
And before we actually read the email, I want to say we got some nice listeners. I've gotten some nice notes over time. And, you know, like they'll comment on my YouTube videos. And thank you. I just want to say thanks for being out there. Thanks for being nice and appreciative. Because I always say doing a podcast is like yelling into the void, and it's not too often people say, hey, you know, I listened to it, I learned something, or I appreciate what you're doing, or your advice was helpful. So it is very nice hearing back from people. So do you want me to read Mark's letter here?
Sure, yeah.
Because it's super small on the screen, but I'll give it a shot. So it says, team, thank you for the Mini PC podcast. It is one of my regular listens while I'm driving to and from work. You've given me a number of ideas for things I need to try on my collection of mini PCs, four older Raspberry Pi, two chips, one Pine64. Unfortunately, with the exception of my Pine64 running OpenHAB, they're all still sitting unused. They used to run on things like Plex, Nextcloud, and Radar Sonar, NZB, but over time I moved them to my FreeNAS box, okay. And thanks for the discussion of Pi Hull. I'll be giving that another shot sometime soon. And just my commentary on that, I moved Pi Hull over to a Pi Zero, and it's running fine, no problem. Let's see. I heard you talking about holding off on the Pinebook Pro for now. I was planning on waiting until the ANSI keyboard came out and decided to take a shot at the pre-order. I guess I just got lucky, as I'm one of the 90 or so to get the coupon for the first batch. Excellent. I ran into one glitch when trying to place my order of the Pinebook Pro and the NVMe adapter at the same time, but the team at Pine were very helpful and got them to straighten it out for me. I have nothing but nice things to say about them. Being fortunate enough to get one of the pre-orders, I feel like I should be doing an unboxing video. I've never done something like that, but I may give it a shot. Any suggestions on what to discuss? I'm not going to say I'm a famous YouTuber. That's absolutely not true. But I know more popular YouTubers, and I talk to them. In one of the discussions that we had recently is, keep it real. People enjoy... If you have genuine emotion, because if you plan what you're going to do and script it, it's going to sound planned and scripted. But if you're excited about it or confused or don't understand, or your emotions come through. So if you do an unboxing video, just go with it live. You know, hey, how does it feel in the hand? Does it, you know, that magnesium case, how does the keyboard feel? What's your impression of the build quality? Those kinds of things. I think if you try too hard, it's not going to seem real. And that's probably, Dor, what do you think? What's your advice?
I'll say I have absolutely no charisma and I can't draw anybody to do anything. I beg for emails and nobody does nothing, but I'll say do the unmentionables, do the things that cannot be communicated in just picture alone. Talk about the feel of it, the weight of it, the solidness of it, the keyboard tactile feel, the mouse pad, how does it feel? And open the hinge, how does the hinge feel kind of thing? How big is the power brick? We have no idea how big the power brick is. You know, if you want to try to see how long it takes to go from dead to fully charged or from fully charged to dead, those are the kind of things that we have no idea as viewers. We have no idea what to expect. And to watch you go through the same ordeal, I think, would be kind of interesting.
Of course, in a purely selfish way, you could just send it to me. I'll do the unboxing video for you. My Pinebook unboxing video was absolutely unscripted. I kind of flubbed a couple of things, but it got good views, and I think people appreciated that it was, you know, just pretty raw. I do have a setup, so I have, and I record everything on my cell phone. So this is a Note 8. And that and my Note 4 are my video recording devices, video acquisition devices. And I'll have an arm, which is just EMT, extruded metal tubing, you know, electrical conduit, with a bracket I 3D printed that holds the phone facing down so I can do a tabletop review and show you a top-down view. But you could do that. You could get, like, a phone clamp, like one of these bases, and just, you know, have it on something that hangs over so you got the straight up and down view.
Yeah, that is the kind of thing where if you want to, you can like pre-set up the viewing angle and stuff just using a normal laptop to see how it will look, because the first like 10-15 seconds of the video, people will immediately decide if they're going to watch the rest of it. So if you show them a good viewing angle of the stuff, they're much more likely to stick around, I believe.
There's all sorts of formulas for that.
Oh, yeah. And there is no wrong formula. That's one of the things. And I say that, and of course there is, but if you try it all, you're not going to do anything wrong. And there was one more paragraph in his email.
Did I miss it? Yeah, I did miss it. Okay. I only use Linux, BSD, and Chrome-based systems for personal use. I don't have need for something both high-powered and portable. So the Pinebook Pro will be just perfect for me. And adding NVMe drive seems to be a prudent thing to do. What would you all be doing with the Pinebook Pro if you were in my shoes? I'd gladly try things out and report back to you. So I rock the Chromebook pretty much every day. So Chromebook is right over here, and my MacBook Pro is over here. And the only thing I now, this is Chromebook stuff, not Pinebook stuff. I don't like how the Chromebook does spreadsheets, because it kind of caches that. And if you flip from not that tab to that tab on a Chromebook, it reloads. So for us, when we're going through the lists, it's tough finding that. So there are some quirks. I don't know if you have that quirk. I guess if you're running, you know, a spreadsheet in Chrome browser on the Pinebook, you're going to have the same issue.
Yeah, I would definitely try to load a Chrome. See, because he said his needs are not big and heavy kind of thing. The NVMe drive, I'm going to tell you now, you are going to see a definite difference when you put that thing in there, no doubt. And here's what I did learn. Solid state drives use remarkably less power. And don't be shocked if an NVMe drive actually probably uses less power than eMMC. It wouldn't shock me whatsoever if that's the case, because NVMe is very, I'll say this, it's a very tight standard that they put out. And like in my little use cases, I found The more solid state a drive like that, the better the power usage. I would say there is going to be, if not already available, a official Pinebook Pro Chromium OS based distribution. I would really be tempted to give that a try and just see how usable it is day to day, just doing the normal thing, checking emails, watching YouTube videos, hanging out in chats, kind of thing, and just see if it's usable and functional. And then if it is, then you can start to play around with, what can you SSH into, and what other types of functionality can you get out of it?
Having a Linux-based distro is kind of important to me because I like a Linux shell. I do kind of have that on my Chromebook. But okay, so one of the things I would do if I was going to do a test is how does it play like my four video sources? So Plex, Amazon, Netflix, YouTube. There's one or two other subscription services. I use YouTube TV. Blaze TV. So there's actually like, I don't know, is that five or six sources of video that I use on a regular basis. Right, I write emails, I might check my Instagram feed or, Facebook, God forbid. I know Door's deadly against Facebook. But there's a couple social media things I do check on a regular basis. But oh, I know what. If you're playing a video, how many hours of video play do you get out of it before you eat the battery? And I'll tell you what, my Pinebook, I don't think I ever ran the battery dead. Not that you can't run it dead, of course you can, but just in regular usage, I never ran it dead. And for the most part, same thing with my Chromebook. I find I'm not using a whole lot of power with these things.
Yeah, my Chromebook, I can't run it dead. It's literally like a 14, 16-hour battery life. When my Pinebook Pro was, or when my Pinebook was functional, it was easily, I will say, 10 to 12 hours of battery life. And as long as it was more than 8, I, like you, never had a reason to make it go completely dead. It was just a simple matter of just plugging it up every night, and it was fine.
Well, that's a funny thing. That's like people ask you how far can you go in an airplane, and a private plane. It's like how long before you have to go to the bathroom is really the question. So yeah, 8 hours. If you're covering 8 hours, if you cover 10 hours, just give you a little extra bumper there. Yeah, you got in the can. There's no more need for more battery after that. That's just icing on the cake.
Gotcha. I will the only other hardware news I have in air quotes is I had a Nextcloud critical failure. I bought a Western Digital Passport drive, got it on sale, got it on a deal. I
That
want to
was a
say it was
refurb, wasn't it?
I'm not might have been a refurb, I'll say that. 4 terabyte. I want to say it was like $89, $90. Not work anymore whatsoever. I can't plug it up to any device and get it to be recognized as anything. So I can't run any diagnostic tool on it and get any information off. It's a spinning disk. And here's my logic. Connecting it to the ROC 64, using it as a mass storage device connected to Nextcloud. It wouldn't shock me if the ROC 64, through the couple power outages I've had in this 6 month time period, which is more than I n normally have, I want to say I have two or three power outages. It wouldn't shock me if just the power fluctuations alone were enough to cause it to fail. So I basically just counted it as dead. I bought a $10, and I'll have a link to in the notes to a Rosewell, I want to say, USB 3. In closure, Rosewell is like the house brand of Newegg, so it's a really affordable kind of thing. And I got a really small, cheap 240 gig Western Digital drive SSD. And what I found out was it literally uses one, I want to say 16th the power of the Western disk digital passport spinning disk drive. So hopefully that means the drive will actually last.
So, let me get the elephant out of the room. I bought this for more money right now at Costco, 8 terabyte USB 3 external drive, $119. I'm I'm like a freak when it comes to storage. I've had this for like 6 months. Actually, I've had this longer than 6 months and haven't cracked it out of the case yet. But what I would do for the drive that went bad, two things. One, throw it in the freezer. Plug it in, see if it works. If that doesn't work, shuck it and plug it in SATA into something and see if it works.
Yeah, I tell you, from the computer techs I know, I'm never buying a large drive ever again for the rest of my life. The failure rate is literally almost 80 times higher once you go above 750 gig on a drive, where an old 650 gig drive can last easily 10 years. With above a terabyte drive, it seems like they will never last more than like 5 years.
So then you buy two and mirror them.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. I'm literally going to buy smaller drives and mirror them out. But here's the other critical failing I had, Rich. We keep preaching to each other about doing backups, and I had not only the data drive from the Nextcloud pointing to that USB drive, but I also had the database for Nextcloud connected to that drive. So I lost literally everything and had to start from scratch.
Oh, crap.
With the Nextcloud instance, which it could have been much more painful, is what I'm going to say. It was a little bit painful, but using ownyourbits.com/downloads, you can get VMs for it, Raspberry Pi images for it, or Rock 64 images for it. So it was a simple matter of just re-downloading that image, flashing it, letting it boot, going through the first time setup. So it was literally like maybe an hour's worth of work to get it back up and running. So it could have been much, much worse. But now, because of that, I swear I'm going to have my main desktop rig do a scheduled task, a cron tab, they call it in the Linux world, a cron tab SSH rsync into the Rock 64 and copy off at least the database of the users and the permissions and the plugins and the and all that kind of stuff back off. So if I have another catastrophic failure, it should be at least quicker to get back up and running.
Yeah, that's a big deal. Let's see. I had a tech support call, and I forget what day it was last week. But the power, a couple times a month, I would have like less than a second power glitch at my house. But I have everything on a UPS, including the cable modem. There's a distribution amp in my crawl space. So the cable modem, my router, the distribution amp, every Pi device that's in my data center in a drawer is on a UPS. My monitors, everything. So this way, if the power goes down, which the next thing I want to do is automate shutdown across devices, so that when the UPS runs low, it knows it'll send a shutdown signal. Right now, I got to manually shut down, and to manually shut down, I need my monitors to work also. So, but yeah, UPS on everything is a big deal. Well, you got the like Rav power brick. You could always put that on there.
Nope, can't do that on the Rock 64. It does not use micro USB or none of them. That's the pain in the butt part.
That's right. I was looking all over for this.
Yeah, I do wish it did use that, but it doesn't. So, you know, that kind of didn't help me much at all.
Basically, it's just the cable. This is a 5-volt hammer. Does it really say 5-amp?
Well, and then the question is, with a USB, or with a UPS system, when was the last time that you replaced that battery? Because everyone keeps telling me when you get those, you have to replace the battery like every year to 18 months.
That's a problem. I have one UPS. Sorry, did I hit the wrong button? I have one UPS, a smaller one, and the battery went dead, and the battery cost more than the entire UPS to replace. And they used not only a security bit,
but they recessed it so you had to have long shaft security vents to open the battery door. I was like, really, guys? Really? You gotta go all out on this?
I can't tell if your audio went kind of crazy or if it was my audio, but you're now like really staticky.
Any better now?
Say a couple more words.
So what I wanted to do is set up Nut on a Pi Zero. And Nut would attach to the UPS, the USB port on the UPS, and it would monitor the UPS's battery and then report what was going on. And one, let me know if I need to replace the battery, and two, issue the shutdown command across my devices so they can shut down gracefully.
Yeah, that is pretty important when you want to, when your power goes out and you have a UPS, you want to make sure things gracefully power down. I will say in the Linux world, it's less important, but it's still important. Yeah, and I did put a link in the YouTube chat. I will have a link to it in the notes of the USB 3, the USB 3 SATA 3 in closure. It was all of $10.99. And I'll say this, if you're a fan of services like HelloFresh, if you buy from them, this device, at least I know two people that did, you will get a coupon for $80 in coupons with four separate orders. So with four orders, you'll save $20 on each order. If you're into that kind of thing. I'll say this, the good and the bad about this enclosure, unbelievably light, compact, smooth, easy to use. But when I have a power outage, the drive will not power back up on its own. I have to tap a button on the side. I almost like the fact that I have to tap the button on the side, so then I'm positive when there's a power outage. But at the same token, that means when there's a power outage, it's not going to come back up on its own.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about how I feel about that. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure, but it's only $10. And I will say sometimes it's better. I'll say this. Sometimes I think it is better to buy like a Western Digital, I want to say blue drive or something like that, where you get a little bit more quality kind of thing. The thing I like about Western Digital drives is you obsessively know what quality you're getting just by the color of the drive. Is it green? Is it blue? You immediately know if you're definitely should expect long-term stability, or is this going to be, you know, maybe dead in a year and a half? Very cool. And I do believe in the email, he did mention Pi-hole. And right, what I wanted to mention was there's a, I'm going to call it a service in the lightest way possible, called EasyList. What basically, this is what I think has to happen with Pi-hole, because Pi-hole by itself kind of sucks. It's, I don't want to say pointless, but it's kind of pointless. If you just install it and you do nothing, the results I've seen are unbelievably, underwhelmingly lame. Instead of getting, you know, 15 ads on a web page, you'll get, you know, 13 kind of thing. It's was really, in my opinion, bad. But using other services, you can find better list of things to block, and that's what I did. EasyList, at least what you do is you basically go to EasyList, and then you can basically extract the TXT file that's in the back end for it, and you can add it to your Pi-hole, and you will immediately see better results. Now, with that said, I then start to think this is going to be a never-ending cat and mouse game of me constantly looking for the best a block list out there and adding them to my Pi-hole to try to keep my experience on my network like as clean as possible with as few intrusive ads as possible. I'm still not really impressed with what I'm seeing at a Pi-hole. It technically works, but I'm not going to say this is something that everybody has to install, at least so far.
I haven't done a side-by-side comparison, but I would swear I haven't seen an ad, period. But you and I have almost an identical setup on what we're blocking. And I don't know what you're seeing that I'm not, but I look at a lot of news sites, you know, political news, and I swear I don't see any ads whatsoever.
It's really simple. You have two computers with two exactly same configured browsers is the key. Take it off of your router. Do not have your router pointing to it for its DNS. And then on one of those computers, just hard code in the IPv4 that the DNS is to that pie hole. 192.168.1.70 or whatever, and have the other one still go to the router and go to the normal routine for DNS. And I will say, news sites are maybe the best possible testing grounds for ad blockers because most of them are atrocious with ads. On one right. website, I know I counted 25 ads when I paged down and went through the whole page. And with Piehole versus non-Piehole default setup, it literally went from like 18 to 20 ads without Piehole to, I want to say, 14 with Piehole. And to me, that's not acceptable. I want, my expectation is I want near zero ads if I'm running Piehole.
Yeah, I think I'm getting like near zero ads. I'm pretty sure about that. But and I'm surprised when I look at same sites on my cell phone and I'm, you know, not on my home network, the amount of ads that I see on my phone.
Well, I am a firm believer most ads are hyper geared towards mobile displaying, kind of like we're like right now, if you enable pop-ups on your browsers for every website, you're not going to get inundated with pop-ups just because they don't really exist anymore. That's not really their target anymore. I like firmly believe now their targets are strictly the mobile market. And I will say, I believe if you use the default Samsung or the Chrome browser, they're doing a little finagly things in the background to ensure that you're seeing appropriate ads, aka enough ads for them to be happy. Where when I used Firefox preview, I want to say it's called, I was seeing with the same connection fewer ads. It wasn't low enough for me to be happy with, but it was definitely, I believe, fewer ads. Carriage, we've been going for about an hour. Is there any of these links in here you wanted to bring up?
Yeah, sure. Since I posted one link, let's talk about the one link I posted. So there is a Pi 02. It's like, there have been a couple of Pi zeros. Like there's the 0+2 and the 0+2H5, and I have one that went bad. All right, so they came out with a new Pi Zero, and it's kind of gangbusters with ports. Not only does it have an Ethernet port, USB 3 port, and an HDMI port, the Ethernet is only 10/100, but it does have Wi-Fi on board. Let's see, you know, I didn't check what Wi-Fi it's got. 802.11 BGN. So that's pretty decent. Bluetooth 4.2. And they're talking about this thing being in the $20 range. They say they would expect it to be in the $20 range. So it's got two USB 3 ports. It's got an IR sensor, it's got a microphone on board, and I'm not sure if it's got a speaker jack on it. Let's see. Video output.
No, I think it expects the audio out to come out the Probably, HDMI yeah. port.
So this, I think, is geared towards being, you know, like a set-top box, that something that plugs into your computer, because it has the IR. I think it's relying on Wi-Fi. If you got USB 3, the next thing I want is gig Ethernet. But the next problem is, and I don't see talks about it here, is the USB 3 full speed, or is it, you know, some neutered speed? And that's what I would be worried about. So at $20, I wouldn't consider this like, hey, get a whole bunch, because you're going to have to pay the AliExpress shipping on it. But if you wanted to use something as a set-top box, and that had, you know, USB 3, oh, and it's, what was the spec? 4K 60 frames or 6K 30 frames? I haven't even heard of 6K. I've heard of 8K. So it's...
Yeah, I mean, those are the kind of numbers I don't worry about.
So it sounds like the video output is pretty decent on this. Again, this is just specs. Nobody's... you know, got their mitts on it and tested it. I kind of like, or I liked the Orange Pis before there was a Pi Zero W, because it was a cheap enough device, although they seemed one kind of hot. And if this is $20 plus shipping, for another $10, you get a Pi 3. I mean, a Pi 4.
Yeah, and I'll say some of the Orange Pis lost support with Diet Pi, so if you are a fan of Diet Pi, then you might not want Orange Pi. I will say if you definitely need stuff like built-in IR or you need all this different built-in IO, the Bluetooth is not 5.0, it's 4.0. The Wi-Fi is not AC, it's ABG. Both of them are fine. Yeah, fine. The Ethernet even being 10/100, literally, I'm pretty sure if you had a gig Ethernet on this device, there would be other bottlenecks limiting you from never reaching the gig speeds. But the IR sensor, the built-in Wi-Fi with an antenna, unlike Raspberry Pi everything, with a built-in antenna, I could see this being like a micro thing that you could use, especially with the IR sensor, a line-of-sight device, whether you just want a remote control for an umbrella or an awning or something like that, I could see it being useful and functional. The real question is, yeah, when you get it and you load the OS on it, does it jump up above like 60 degrees kind of thing? Because in the past, Orange Pis, all the Orange Pis we've gotten on this show has definitely not been running cool and light is what I'll say. But they are pretty flexible devices.
Yeah, it's if it was $20 to my door, I'd consider it. But I don't have a need right now.
Yeah, and I mean, I do like the fact that it uses the micro USB for power. I do like the I/O on it. I feel pretty confident in saying those video specs you're only going to get with a very select type of video in a very select type of format being delivered in a very select type of format, like only on the eMMC or connected in the USB 3. There's no doubt you're not getting full USB 3 speeds, but at the same token, even if you were, there'd be other bottlenecks. But again, if you could pick these up for, like you say, around $20, they might be useful, functional, but me, I'm to the point now where I'll make a Raspberry Pi Zero do what it can do, and then for everything else, I'll buy a ROG 64 or a Raspberry Pi 4.
Yeah, and I'm pretty much in the same boat. This does have 4 gigs of eMMC, so you could do onboard booting. Although, my last Pi Zero, I think it was like 2 plus H5, like I got the high-end version, doesn't boot anymore, and it has the eMMC on board. So I'm a little ticked off about that.
Gotcha. So yeah, I'll say two things this has that the Raspberry Pi, no Raspberry Pi has, is one, has a physical button to power on, power off, and number two, a physical antenna on it. I'm literally telling people right now, if the Raspberry Pi 4 had wireless with a physical antenna, you would see anywhere from 20 to 50% better stability and at least 10 to 20% better speeds. I don't know why they will not put an antenna on it. And if you had a button on it, you would then save $8 to $10 for buying a button, and it would be much more user-friendly for the first-time person doing their little home appliance kind of thing. So, to me, the Orange Pi and Pine 64 and Odroid and the Lee Potato and everybody are at least doing something better than the Raspberry Pi, but, you know, it's really hard to beat the Pi.
Yep. Yeah, it's funny, like, there's the two buttons down here, or the white things, or the buttons.
And it has the IR sensor right
there
too.
And I don't remember what the buttons, which one it is.
I believe the bottom one, the furthest away from the IR is power, the closest one is reset.
Yeah, I think that's what they said. So, yeah, I want to do a video on, I think, running this with Plex and the Pi 4 with Plex and see how they do.
Okay, Rich, if you want to, I'm going to ask you to read, if you can, one more email, and this was an older one from Uncle Bonehead, very long time listener, very long time supporter, and he was commenting on, I can't even pronounce it, Palorma, PLEROMA, which was like the Mastodon-esque
that I couldn't get run.
Service that you can run.
Okie doke. In fact, I was kind of revisiting this today on for some other reasons. So it says, "Hey guys, longtime Podnuts listener here, but not. Oh, not this show. Oh, okay. I didn't understand what he was getting at. Not because it's not good, because I don't have any interest in mini PCs. Shame on you. But man, I've fallen in love with them recently. Oh, we got them hooked. You mentioned Palorma in episode 92, which I couldn't get running. And I don't know if you are aware of the movement over the last couple of years to what is known as Fediverse, is a movement to away from big centralized players on the internet like Google, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, etc. Basically, any large corporation that sucks up personal data. And it's very funny because I have been looking at this today. Federated social media is basically social media or any website, really, that has integrated the ActivityPub protocol, okay, which allows them to all interconnect if they are on one giant site. Most of the self-hosted, either on a VPS or many even are on somebody's home server. My best analogy is to picture a trailer park, okay, where each trailer is called an instance, but they all are connected together to look as if it's somebody's big house. There are tons of them already. Mastodon is the biggest. There is also Palorma, PeerTube, which I'm not familiar with. Pixel Feed, Write Freely, Plume, and a whole lot more. I'm hosting my Pixel Feed and Write Freely on my home server, while Pixel Feed hasn't implemented the ActivityPub protocol and completely federated, yet I have installed it to see what it's like and found it quite pain-free. Oh, that's cool. Which brings me to my next point. Have you heard of Unohost? And it's unohost.org. You should really check it out. Similar to Freedom Box and Freedom, is that Freedom Bone? But way better. And
never heard of that.
It's on Debian. It's even included in Debian's own timeline. The goal is to make it super simple, anybody to host their own server. Let's say it's simple to install, set up. I had it installed on a Dell Optiplex 330 in less than 10 minutes. After the post-install directions, I was doing email and syncing to my own Nextcloud with 30 minutes. By the way, they already have 100-plus apps that can be installed in a click. It's perfect for the Raspberry Pi. Oh, very cool. Thanks for your time in the very informative show. I would love to talk more, but actually have to get back to trucking. Is he a truck driver? Oh, we have many truck driver friends. Thanks again, Ryan, a.k.a. Uncle Bonehead.
Very cool. I can say I've never heard of Unihost. I've never heard of Freedom Bone, and I swore he was typoing and it was Freedom Home, but no, it's Freedom B-O-N-E, Bone. So I'm going to have to definitely dig into these and check these out.
Yeah, I'm just looking at Unohost right now. So here's my beef. So flyingrich.com, I have RSS feeds that I pull from like my Instagram account, my YouTube account, those kinds of things. And one of the, I used Pinterest to replace Google Plus. And what I liked about Google Plus is, one, I could share a link among groups. So whether it was Mini PC or somebody else, I could share the links among the groups that way. But also, if I went to a website and I wanted to share it with the Mini PC group, it would pull some images and do a best guess on what image should represent the content, or you could click through and select the actual image. So it was pretty pain-free to, you know, publish a not only the site with an image, which is important because image is what attracts us to things more than text. But you could also give your little commentary, like, hey, Dor, check this out. There's a new mini PC on the market. I was doing that with Pinterest. And the way I was doing it is I was actually reading their RSS feed and then parsing out the original URL and then using that to post. So you could go to my site, Flying Rich, and click through to see the original post as opposed to going to Pinterest. You never knew Pinterest was on the back end. Pinterest was my way of acquiring and editing what image was going to be applied. So that's why I was looking at all of these other social media sites like Mastodon and whatever. And I have a hosting account that, hey, maybe I can throw one of these on my hosting server and just use it as a back end with an RSS feed to use in place of Google Plus.
Gotcha, gotcha. Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing about all these sites, in my opinion. They're all just tools. And the question is, can you figure out how to make the tool useful for your use case kind of thing? These look interesting, is what I'm going to say. I'm not going to promise anything, but I promise I'll at least examine them and see what's up. Freedom Bone is the one that is catching my attention just because it has all the different services built into it. And I like the idea of telling people, look, you can just install this one thing, and then it's one thing gives you access to everything else.
So they have a distro that runs on single board computers. VoIP, they got VoIP built in. That's cool.
Yeah, what I'm going to guess is Freedom Box is like the Richard Stallman of solutions, where they insist you have to be unbelievably 100% capital F free. And I'm going to guess Freedom Bone is a touch more lax about what they allow, in air quotes, onto their platform. I don't know. I'm going to definitely check it out, though. So at least we have things to check out. And Uncle Bonehead, even though it took us like 4+ episodes to get to your email, thank you for your patience. And there is more links in here to his Bonehead Media website, which is an example of what can be ran on the Unihost platform. So I'll definitely try to have that in the notes too. And he has a couple more links there. I definitely thank you for your email, Ryan, and please be safe out there, man. Okay, Rich, do you have any like parting words for everybody?
No, just like I yelled out my site a couple of times, so flying.com. Keep an eye out for my YouTube videos, because I'll be doing a couple of more Pi 4 videos in the future. I've been getting some good traction with them. And so I'm going to be doing some speed comparisons in the future.
Very cool, very cool. If anyone wants to send us an email, all they got to do is send an email to minipc@podnuts.com, or you can go to podnuts.com, click on contact. Or if you really want to send us a voicemail, you can send us a voicemail to 7076podnut. And if you want to connect with me directly, it's unbelievably easy with almost any service that exists except for Facebook, you know, because that's just the way it is. I want to thanks for everyone for downloading. I want to thanks for everyone's support. I want to thanks for everyone for coming out. We'll definitely talk to everyone again real soon.
This is Martin from Podnuts Pro. Thank you so much for choosing this podcast to be in your ears right now. Don't forget to support all the other Podnuts shows on the Podnuts Network. And we cannot do this without you. So please, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, email us at podnutspro@podnuts.com.